Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From the field to the court to the rink, get your sports on AM 950 and 95.7 FM. The sports leader, ESPN Rochester.
You know, it's funny. I sent Nick Wotan, who we've had on the show before, a note saying, hey, that was a great article you put up on the 53-man roster projection. And then he sends me a note back and says, well, it was great, but I didn't write it. Like, oh, I'm sorry. Jeremy Uhas wrote it, so let me introduce you to Jeremy. So through the magic of radio, we welcome in, for the first time, the sports bar, Jeremy Uhas from the Bills Wire. Jeremy Gene Battaglia here in Rochester. How are you?
Hey, Gene. Thank you. Appreciate coming on and chatting with you. Yeah, it was funny. Nick told me that same story, and I'm happy to come on with you.
No, so listen, he owes you some royalties, or how does this work here? How does his byline end up on your work? I would be saying, hey, Mr. Graphic Editor, let's get this fixed here.
Such an unselfish guy, you know.
Yeah.
Giving the credit back to the writer. So, no, Nick's a great managing editor over there, and we're excited for another Bills season to kick off soon.
We're going to be right down the road here, St. John Fisher College players reporting 8 days. When you're putting together a 53-man roster, and some years it's easy. In fact, it's easy to cut below the 53 if you're doing a projection. How difficult was it for you as far as getting to 53?
You know, it definitely took a couple iterations here of trying to figure out which position group battles would be more or less more difficult, and we'll probably get into that a little bit, but you know, especially the offensive line position with the amount of linemen that were signed through free agency, Brandon Bean bringing into the team, and you know, definitely took a couple of strokes of the keyboard to hit delete, you know, entering a couple different names. There was a lot of tinkering with it, but I'm pretty happy with how this turned out. And again, I think my approach to it was, you know, let's just try to get the best players on paper, because we don't know how these guys are actually going to perform on the field, and injuries and all those other instances that can occur throughout a training camp. So these are just guys that I thought would make a solid 2019 squad for the team.
Yeah, and I think most of us are kind of in lockstep that Barkley's your number two, and unless the quarterback out of UB, Tyree Jackson, really wows people, you're probably safe in stashing him on the practice squad. It's where the running back position, and I guess we have fun on our show talking about who should get the bulk of the work, how do you work in Devin Singletary. But when you're doing this from just a numbers standpoint, what about the back end of this? Now, assuming, and this is another assumption, that LeSean McCoy is on the opening day roster, you've got some decisions there between Center Rice Perry and also, I guess you kind of lump in the fullback here, too. We kind of forget that there's a veteran in this whole mix, Patrick DeMarco. So how do you figure all that situation out?
Yeah, so with my projection, you know, I think with Frank Gore coming on board, he's such a great pass protector, and I think that's one of his biggest assets. And also, you know, he ran the ball extremely well, a lot better than LeSean did last year. And speaking of LeSean, you bring up a good point. You know, will he be traded, or just a lot of chatter because of his poor performance last year, but also just speculation in terms of numbers. And yeah, toward the end, you know, having Sonoris Perry there, you know, for his special teams ability. That was important. But I think, you know, getting back to Frank and his ability to pass protect, I think that's what Pat DeMarco was on this team for, to protect Josh Allen or whoever was the quarterback. And now that he's, you know, getting a little bit older, I know he's a captain. I know he's well-respected on that team. But what's the need for a fullback? I think also, you know, Brian Daboll's going to want to air it out a little bit more with Josh Allen. Just the fullback position in general, I'm not sure is coveted or necessarily needed anymore. So, you know, that's kind of why I went with five running backs. My projections that having the Bills cut the veteran Pat DeMarco going forward.
Yeah, and the guy's blocking for him up front, and we're talking about position battles. I think we know that Mitch Morse will be the center. I think that Deion Dawkins probably is at left tackle. That's not 100% certain. So if you had to project what would be, and again, it, lock and change here, injuries, throwing all those objections aside, what's a starting offensive line, and how do you think that the depth will fall out here? How difficult was it for you, Jeremy, to figure out how to project the, you know, who makes the roster in terms of the offensive line?
Yeah, by far this was the toughest position to narrow down, just because they had so many capable guys, guys that played in the league before, and guys that you know that can step in a moment's notice should an injury occur. And I think that's a good thing for the Bills. You know, I think they'll be able to mix and mash a little bit here, and they have done that already in the limited work. But now the pads come on here in the next week, and we'll see how this shakes out. I got, you know, Mitch Morse, obviously the starting center, brought in with a big contract. He's going to want to start at the center position. I've got Quentin Spain and John Feliciano kind of fighting it out with Spencer Long to start at guard. Between those three guys, I think those two of those will start. Long obviously gives you a little bit of flexibility at the center position should an injury happen to your starting big-time paying center, Mitch Morse. And then a tackle, I think you're right. Until we hear anything other from the Bills brass that they don't see Deion Dawkins as a starting left tackle in this league, then I'm penciling him in there. And then Cody Ford and Ty Nasecki will kind of battle it out for the right tackle spot. I think they would probably give Ford the nod. I think they drafted him in the second round for a reason. Nasecki, though, was signed to a pretty decent salary. So that will be kind of the position opposite of that left tackle Deion Dawkins spot that I'll be watching on the offensive line, is who's that right tackle to replace Jordan Mills here on that offensive line. But those are my starters. I would say Morse, probably Spain, Feliciano, Dawkins on the left side, and then either Ford or Nasecki there on the right tackle spot.
Yeah, and you have an interesting name, somebody who started for the Buffalo Bills last year, not making it, Wyatt Teller. Your thoughts on Teller and what he did or did not do last year?
You know, I just think Wyatt was a, you know, kind of a mid-round pick last year for the team. Came in, started, you know, so I think they got a lot of film on him last year with his ability to play. And that's what you want to see from a rookie, is playing time if possible. And the Bills, obviously, with their record, were able to, you know, plug him into that lineup and see what he had. And I just think they've upgraded. You know, I just think it's simple as that. They went out and signed better players, and you know, I think they would want to groom a young guy to come up into it, and maybe he performs well and outperforms one of the veterans. But I just think that they wanted to really upgrade that position, and you know, it's unlikely that you would get a lot of film on a rookie drafted that late, but he was able to play, and I think that spells a lot for his projection as a pro, and I just think that they upgraded with the signing.
The wide receiver position, this is true of this camp. It's true of every other Bills camp I've ever been to. This is where fans will gravitate to, because it's easy to kind of pick out and understand what's going on here. And how big would you say special teams will be in terms of differentiating who might be the, say, the sixth or seventh wide receiver in this group?
I think it'll be huge. You know, I think, you know, they brought Andre Robertson, who torched the Bills last year with a know, kickoff return for a touchdown. I think, you know, they brought him in for that reason. And, you know, I think he's also underutilized as a receiver. So someone like that down on the depth chart that wouldn't necessarily figure into making a huge impact on the team, I think his special teams ability makes an impact. I know I have Ray McLeod third making it over Isaiah McKenzie. I feel like those two guys are so similar in their prototype and just what they can do with running short routes in the slot. But you also have Cole Beasley there. So to keep three slot guys will be highly unlikely. And I think Ray Ray's ability to also return punts and his ability on special teams might keep him around a little bit longer. So those are the guys at the bottom of that wide receiver position that I really wanted to make sure I kept into the people's minds and make sure that they think, you know, these guys could sneak in there. And then you also have, you know, the guys they signed from the CFL. And that's, to me, is going to be a really interesting guy to watch. You know, I think Duke Williams, you know, coming into the team and being a prolific receiver in the CFL and coming from Auburn, and kind of though his troubled past, you know, can he right the ship and kind of turn his career, his life around with the Bills? I think I have him making it on the roster as my last guy. Just from the sheer fact of his size, he gives you something that a lot of the other Bills receivers don't have, and that's that prototypical number one receiver size and red zone target ability that you want.
Yeah, and gosh, I mean, we've had other receivers like this, and I recall a guy, I think it was a 7th-round pick, Dez Lewis. Dez Lewis on the field looked the part. He looked, okay, this is exactly what you want, and then, yeah, he just kind of disappeared and get covered. So when I'm projecting who are the most interesting players I want to watch this camp, certainly Devin Singletary, but Duke Williams, yeah, I saw it, the tape from the CFL and read the stories, everything else, but I mean, you know, and I don't know the answer to this question. Are we going to get what you hope is somebody, a diamond in the rough, or is this another Dez Lewis, so to speak, here, Jeremy?
Well, I think, you know, they didn't sign him to a deal that would speak to something that they expect a lot of. And, you know, he's a flyer, someone that you're hoping that has that talent and can tap down into that SEC talent that he possessed as a youngster and hope that, you know, he can make kind of the step into the NFL and transition from the CFL. You know, he's, like I said, a flyer, but he's super interesting. And I just love all of his measurables. You know, I think that's what kind of sets him apart, because the Bills have a lot of shorter receivers, slender receivers. This guy is filled out, and I think, you know, he's kind of more of like that Eric Mold type of player, not in terms of production necessarily, but, you know, a lot of Bills fans remember his kind of, you know, stature, and, you know, he just kind of reminds me of someone like that.
What does Eddie Yarbrough have to do to save a job? The Bills brought him back, but for Eddie Yarbrough not to be active week 17, that kind of tells me that his job is in danger this year. And I looking at your projection, I think you would tend to agree with me on that, Jeremy.
Yeah, and he has a lot of competition there, too, because, you know, Mike Love will be pushing for it. I don't have him making the roster either. He was taken last, or signed as an undrafted free agent, last draft, and I think the team likes him. It kept him around in the practice squad last year. So someone like Eddie, who's been around and a veteran, it's almost a matter of time before those guys unfortunately see the end of their career, before younger guys can do the job that they're doing or better. And, you know, I think this year might be one of those years where, you know, you've got Shaq pretty much in Trent Lawson, that is, and you've got a lot of guys on that D-line returning, and I just don't know how many snaps Eddie Yarbrough would take. But in terms of just the depth, I think it just might have run its course with Eddie on this team.
We're talking from the Bills Wire, a player, a writer who didn't get credit for this great article he wrote, Jeremy Uwas, joining us here in the sports bar. When we talk about the Bills defense and leadership, we all like Lorenzo Alexander, and Lorenzo Alexander on the field, but when it comes to the nickel, he'll be coming off the field. But in the base defense, here's my concern, because I can't project Lorenzo Alexander to play 16 games. So when you're doing your linebacker projections here, who gets the job, knowing that this is somebody that if Lorenzo Alexander can't play a game or two here, he'd be a really good guy to line up opposite of Matt Milano?
Yeah, I think someone like Deion Lacy can fill that void. And the rookie, Boshon Joseph, I think can slide right in there and learn right underneath Lorenzo. And the Bills linebacking core will, you know, kind of shift around a little bit. I mean, they're going to have the true Mike linebacker and Tremaine Edmonds, you know, kind of anchoring that defense in the middle. But, you know, weak side, strong side linebackers in this defense are pretty flexible. And so I think Boshon, you know, he's very explosive, a guy that can run sideline to sideline. So you have that guy, especially in sub packages, to give Lorenzo a breather with his age, as we just discussed. So I think those two guys and, you know, could fill in via injury or just give the veteran Lorenzo a blow there.
Yeah, the only player that I will ask you about that's not, we know Edmonds is going to be the starting Mike linebacker here. What's the ceiling here? When we saw him out at Fisher last year, you could see the physical gifts, but I mean, like, he's a kid, okay? He can't even order a beer. But at some points last year, you saw him, you know, getting sucked into a wrong gap here or there. So I'm fascinated to see the progress he's made from year one to year two. But we're so focused on Allen and the offense that sometimes we can overlook that. Wow, here is, in my opinion, some player with great potential. What, in your opinion, what is the ceiling for a player like Tremaine Edmonds?
Well, I think he has a ceiling to be an All-Pro, to be honest. And I say that because of, you know, because of his size, because of his youth. And he made so many strides last year from the beginning of the year in that Chargers game. He looked very lost early in the season. But, you know, by the end of the year, his length was giving quarterbacks trouble, you know, looking at targets over the middle of the field, getting hands on balls. You know, he commanded the defense of an NFL franchise before, you know, before he can drink. So that's impressive. I will tell you this, too. I saw him personally this summer. The man is exactly what I said. He's a beast. He's huge. You know, I'm in my early 30s. This guy isn't even 21, and he just powers over you. And really nice guy. But, you know, he was down working out and with his brother, actually, he plays for the Steelers when I met him. And, you know, you could tell he was focused and, you know, extended my appreciation for his rookie year. And he said, well, you know, there's more to come. So you could tell he's a focused guy. You could tell football is a big part of his life. I think his ceiling is really unmatched. And I'm glad you brought up, Gene, the point of we give so much attention to the quarterback, but really the quarterback of this defense and maybe the heart and soul of that defense for years to come will be Tremaine Edmonds.
We're talking to Jeremy Uhas from the Bills Wire. He's got a projection up. You can read on that at BillsWire.com or BillsWire.USAtoday.com as we're all kind of, you know, brushing up here for training camp that opens up next week. When you're talking about the cornerback position, that's the fun battle, right? One of them here as far as positional battles. We know Trey White is on one side, but how do you handicap? I mean, you have candidates there between Taron Johnson, Levi Wallace. You bring in a veteran like Kevin Johnson. You've got E.J. Gaines, who when he was in Buffalo a couple of years ago did a fine job, albeit, you know, in the games he wasn't available every game. I guess my question is, When you're doing the camp projection here, who do you have winning that battle opposite of Trey White?
Well, I think right now it's Levi Wallace's job to lose. I think he really supplanted that last year with his play, and pretty, you know, remarkable for a guy who, you know, was undrafted from Alabama, didn't play a whole lot at Alabama either, but, you know, someone that I'm sure Brian Daboll knew from his time there, and I think it's his job to lose. I know Kevin Johnson has looked pretty good so far as well, and those two guys, I think, on the outside will be the primary combatants to see who they can go opposite Trey White. You know, E.J. Gaines and Taron Johnson will probably play more of those nickel sub-packages, as we were talking about, as Lorenzo gets off the field. So, you know, those guys may go on the outside every now and then, depending on who their matchups are, but I think for the most part, those guys will stay inside, and you're going to have Levi Wallace pretty much taking that opposite role of Trey White, unless Kevin Johnson, you know, comes in and feeds him. But what I like about this group is the depth, not only outside, but like I mentioned too, inside with EJ coming back after spending a year with the Browns. He was a great fit in this defense when he played 2 years ago. So I really like this group. I think it has to be one of the best positions on the team in terms of, you know, depth, you know, top to bottom, and then paired with the safety position. I think this is one of the best secondaries in the league that doesn't get enough credit, in my opinion.
Yeah, and as far as the safeties, we can pencil in, of course, Poyer and Hyde, but yeah, it's such a physical position, though, that if one of the two, and you brought up Neil, but what about the depth behind that? And my opinion, reading over your article here, I think you got a guy that, he might not make the 50. To me, those are good signs that if you have to make tough decisions, you know, players that you might think could contribute that are not making this team here. Who do you have the Buffalo Bills cutting at safety?
Yeah, so I have them cutting, you know, the incumbent veteran. I have Dean Marlowe actually making it, Jaquan Johnson, the rookie from Miami. But I have them cutting Raphael Bush, who, you know, came in and stepped in after, you know, spending some time with the Saints in his career. But, you know, Bush has, you know, filled in pretty nicely, but it's one of those deals where they just drafted a safety, and in Johnson, they may want to give, you know, him a little bit more of a role. I know that they're going to want Teron Neal to play a little bit more. They drafted him 2 years ago, and he's been playing a lot in these sub packages as well, coming down in the box. And, he's so versatile. You know, can cover like a corner, but can also come up and hit you like a linebacker. So, you know, Saron Lino, I think, is going to get a lot of playing time. Then you have a young guy in Johnson who can push for, you know, that, you know, either more sub packages or just have him there for depth. And then it's always been kind of a competition between D. Marlow and someone who else is like a veteran, such as, you know, Raphael Bush. And it seems like Marlow, to me, has been coming on pretty strong. And if he does get cut by the Bills, it seems like, Gene, sometimes the Bills will sign him back a week later, you know, because he knows the system so well. He's played it for so long. But he's just one of those fringe guys that provides good depth and knows the defense very well. I think he can, you know, have a good camp and, you know, unseat the veteran Raphael Bush.
I think he's somebody that he missed his time in this league. I mean, he did, you know, big hitter, but, you know, you got to be careful with not picking up those extra flags if you're a step late there in the secondary. But it's always nice to have that kind of, that idea. If you're a receiver coming across the middle, I mean, it is still football after all. You don't want to get lit up there. And I think Dean Marlow can do that, certainly. One last question. Our guest here, of course, Jeremy Uhas from the Bills Wire joining us. Special teams, how does the punter battle go? And is Steven Hauschka a lock here, or I just go back to, okay, yeah, maybe he was hurt. They wouldn't change kickers, would they?
I don't believe so. You know, Hauschka has been pretty good in his career. His age is a little bit of a concern for kicker. He's been around for a long, long time now, but it'll definitely be a position battle, I think, to keep a closer eye on. It might be closer than we all think it should be. But in the end, I still have Hauschka being the kicker for this team. He's proven it in cold weather games, bad weather games, Seattle, and of course in Buffalo. So for him to be not the kicker come opening day would be a shock for me. So I still have him making it over Chase McLaughlin, who's going to push him. And then the punting position too. It's funny, we've had Brian Moorman for so long, and before that, and punter's never really been a big position battle to watch. But you know, I have Corey Carter, the big right-legged kicker, and in my article, you know, I love his name, Corey Carter. I like alliteration. I'm a big fan of that gene just in general. So that's why I chose. I didn't really analyze too deeply on punters, but Bohorquez, you know, he came in last year and got hurt, if you remember. And, you know, the Bills had to scramble their punting situation last year. So I think they're definitely going to want to get that settled one way or the other coming out of camp. And, you know, video I've seen of Carter and all the reports of, you know, what he can possess as a leg. Strong kid. I like him coming out. And then Reed Ferguson, the long snapper, he's probably the safest bet to be on the team, the only long snapper on the roster right now. And, you know, barring any really unfortunate circumstances where there's an injury and or, you know, he's just not performing that well this camp, which I don't think he will, you know, you got Reed Ferguson as your long snapper, and that's the 53.
Jeremy Uhas, the Bills Wire, appreciate your time today. Tell everybody where people can follow you and read more of your work, your coverage here.
Yeah, not a problem. Thanks for having me, Gene. You can read our articles at billswire.usatoday.com. You can follow me. My handle on Twitter is at Jeremy Uhas, spelled with a J. And look forward to a lot of Bills conversation here coming in the future weeks.
Yeah, and don't let Wolton steal your bylines, and you'll be good. So.
Yeah, no. Yeah. He won't do that anymore, I promise.
Jeremy, thanks so much, and looking forward to reading more of your work. Take care.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.